Thank you, Scott. What I want to talk about today is some challenges and solutions to implementing the network that we've done here in Charlotte.
We'll just go with that. So we're pleased you're here, and part of what we're going to do in the next few minutes is discuss challenges in the network connectivity and what Charlotte is doing, or at least trying to do to overcome them. Charlotte has a pretty good planning base, I think, for starting connectivity or network development through our urban street design guidelines. In Charlotte, we start transportation planning really with the land use component. And the urban street design or the transportation action plan that you see here, the cover of, starts with the first goal of saying continue to implement the centers, corridors, and wedges growth strategy. Centers, corridors, and wedges is a type of growth strategy we've chosen for ourselves because we recognize that growth that occurs along those traditional highway and rail corridors has the infrastructure in place generally because that's historically where growth has been, where infrastructure takes place, or it has the potential to put that infrastructure in place. And in fact, one of those corridors, the South Corridor, right here where you see the light rail line coming through the building, is the first major transit investment in one of those corridors in our centers, corridors, and wedges. Of course, Center City is the premier center for our community, but we do have centers scattered all over. So the Transportation Action Plan first references the land use plan, the land use strategy, centers, corridors, and wedges growth strategy. And the second goal really has to do with all the infrastructure things and the way you build streets and roads and that sort of thing. But we start with the land use plan, and that's why it's important. The Urban Street Design Guidelines flows right out of the Transportation Action Plan. It's one of those objectives and policies that comes out of the Transportation Action Plan. And it specifically talks about building network, building connectivity. And sometimes you have to be careful what you measure, and sometimes we measure too much. But in this particular case, we actually have a policy or an objective that says we want to enhance the connectivity ratio all over town. That's a fairly audacious thing to say, quite honestly, because we are a sprawling Sunbelt city, and we're not very well connected as a city. But the objective here is to actually increase our connectivity. Now, when you see things like Route 4 is sort of an arterial or an avenue type of a loop around the city, and it's called Route 4 because it's roughly 4 miles outside of where we're standing right now. But that 4 miles is sort of the pre-World War II part of the city, highly connected, traditional grid network. That's where your Myers Parks and your Dilworths and Center City and all that are, NoDa, all that. Outside is the more 1950s onward part of the city, so it's more the suburban-type loop system. So our urban street design guidelines and our transportation action plan really deal with context-based streets, complete streets, if you will. And again, complete streets doesn't mean wide streets necessarily. It just means the street that's appropriate for the area that it's meant to serve, and it serves all the users. But beyond a complete streets, we need a complete street network because you can build great streets. You can have one or two really great streets, and people come and visit it, and they walk down it, and they think, well, this is a really great street. But you really build a community and a town on a grid of street networks or an interconnected network. Now, when I say grid, I don't mean gridiron. I just mean a highly connected system of streets. So within that design, we recognize that different streets need to take place in different areas. What Andres referenced, having a single cross-section that runs all the way through town, no matter where in town it is the wrong way to plan. This suggests that you can change that street cross-section and change the character of the street depending on what part of the community it's going through and that it serves. Complete streets have all the regular things that you normally associate with complete streets, all the components that make it not only just a street for moving, but a part of the urban fabric and a part of community open space. A lot of people forget that streets is where people experience the public realm every day, all the time. You may go to a park or a library every now and then, but you go to a street every day, and that's a huge part of the public realm. So we ought to be getting it right. What I wanted to point out was the six-step process right here. The six-step process actually is now starting to get replicated all over the country, much to our surprise, because it's a very simple process. It just simply talks about how you think about roads, how you think about street design. And you may have heard that The carpenter's motto is measure twice, cut once. Our motto is think before you measure. So the urban street design guidelines for those streets that we might design through our capital improvements program, if you look at the urban street design guidelines, you'll notice something strange about it. In all of our diagrams, there is not one dimension. We don't dimension our diagrams. We talk about what needs to be in there. We talk about what might be an appropriate range of measurements. And we do that because there are lots and lots of books that give you all kinds of measurements. You can do that. Or you can go out and measure things at work and get that as well. Now, in our streets that developers build, subdivision streets, commercial streets, that sort of thing, we have to put dimensions in there, and they're more prescriptive, although we did offer a much wider range of street types. So you don't have just one subdivision type street. You've got streets that can flex with the density and the size of the lots and that sort of thing. So you can have a narrower street and large lots where you're not expecting on-street parking and people have driveways and all that, wider streets where you expect higher density and parking on both sides of the street. So that's what that's about. From a network perspective, we feel like that having better streets, we need to have more streets. Now, a lot of people don't like to hear that, but the fact is part of the problem is we've had too few streets. We've had big, wide streets, but just too few of the kind of streets that really work and do most of the big work for our communities. You just found out from Tom Hanchett that Charlotte actually did exist before 1970. So this is a 1928 map of Charlotte. The red lines are streetcar lines. So we had a really robust streetcar system here for many, many years. But what I like about this is Myers Park, by the way. That's where they look at that. Look what they did to bust up the grid. Can you believe that? Dilworth is over here. Wilmore is right here. But what you notice about this map is all the way around the town, all the way around, are stub streets, right? We stubbed them out. Because the traditional design, the traditional way you built cities back then is the next developer that had a subdivision added on here. The next developer added on up here. So you had a ready-made, I mean, it was culturally the thing to do. When you went and developed, you just continued to add on to the grid. And even when John Nolan got a hold of Myers Park right here, while you don't see cul-de-sacs so much, you still see where there's room to grow the city. And so that's what folks did. Now, this is pretty much the same area that you just saw in the previous slide. And underneath all of this, there's lots of streets all up under all that. But it just so happens that down here, the streets are all cul-de-sacs and dead ends. And really, the three streets that you see are here on the map. Whereas here, there's just all this robust network of streets all through there. The reason this map is important is because the red dots here indicate a highly congested intersection. So that's where the congestion resides. You can see that there's a lot of them out here, not so many of them in here. And simply because the gridded street network, and we've measured this very carefully, the gridded street network just simply works. It works for traffic, it disperses traffic, it works for pedestrians, it works for public transportation. Out in here, you're 10 times more likely to get into a congested intersection here than you are in here. Just simple as that. And in here, highest population density in the region, highest employment concentration in the region, all that's right there, but it works. One of the reasons this demonstrates why a well-connected street network is a good idea. This is kind of on the edge of that green box. Nice area. Providence Road is a state highway, and it goes many, many miles to the south. This is what it looks like during the a.m. peak hour, the 1 hour in the morning. And with all this traffic and the noise and all that, of course, you get your walls, you get these big buffers. This is actually a residential road, so the big buffers. But then at 10 o'clock, about an hour later, it looks like this. So you've got all this pavement, all this infrastructure, all this stuff in place. It really gets used for an hour or two a day. So one of the things we've started doing in our traffic analysis is we've started pulling the peak hour back to 2 hours on the morning and the afternoon, and that helps us, I think, be more effective and thoughtful in the way we spend money. The urban street design guidelines call for smaller blocks. That's how you get to that connectivity ratio. So smaller blocks give you a lot of good things. You know, it certainly disperses traffic and creates more capacity in the network, low speed, appropriate speed. The smaller blocks simply encourage walking. They encourage bicycling. They're better for public transportation. And, you know, we're concerned that kids of a generation have forgotten what it means to go take a walk around the block, and we'd like to demonstrate how you can do that again. So our block sizes that we're seeking, and it's an average block size, and I think this slide suggests that it doesn't need to be a gridiron. Blocks can come in all kinds of shapes and sizes. But on average, we believe that in our transit station areas, which are these green dots, that we should aspire to a smaller, finer grid of blocks. In our designated centers, remember I talked about centers, corridors, and wedges. In our designated centers, that happens to be South Park, should be about 500 blocks on average. And then in our corridors, these are big corridors that radiate out from Center City, which is right there. And this is the South Corridor, which already has its light rail line in place. There's highways, there's railroads, there's all kinds of things in those corridors. You can do about 600-foot blocks. And then out here in the wedges, where the residential subdivisions have historically been built, you can get away with a bigger block size. Our urban street design guidelines talk about not only how you build a network inside of a development, but how you stub that development out, just like the map I showed you where all around the city there were stub streets ready for the next extension, ready for the next subdivision, ready for the next commercial area. But this has been the big one. This has been the real thing that's gotten our developers upset with us, because they don't want to stub streets out to adjacent properties and be ready for the next development. They're sort of okay with inside because they're understanding the value of walking around the block, but they sure don't want to connect to the next subdivision over because, you know, the next subdivision over may be selling houses for $50,000 less than theirs, and that would hurt their property value. So they don't want to do that. Creek crossings is a big issue, and we'll talk in a moment about that. It has to do with the environmental consciousness and concerns of folks, but that becomes an issue for us, and we're trying to address how you responsibly and appropriately cross creeks more of the time. We have plenty of creeks here. Lots of challenges to building the network, and I'll just step you through some of those fairly quickly. Keeping the existing connections. There's always pressure. There's always some development. There's always something that wants to be bigger than the block that it sits on. And so we struggle with that. That's a street that was there, and now it's not. It's a parking lot. So keeping existing streets is tough. A barrier is just happens to be the existing development pattern. It's really, really, really tough to go back in here and create a well-connected grid after it's already built. It's almost a non-starter. It's what gets us as staff yelled out at city council meetings quite a bit. So it's a really tough thing, and this is actually the south part of Charlotte. And then along with that, you can see why some of those connections haven't been made, because you have topography, you have streams, you have natural barriers, so you have these long stretches where you just really have very few connections through there, and it kind of splits up the city that way. Challenges is that sometimes we just lose development opportunities. Here we're smart enough to stub streets out all over the place in here. This was a little golf, like a three-hole golf course, a little practice course at one time, and it wanted to be redeveloped. So it developed just like this, you know, all these stubs left out there. You know, what's really weird about this is like a retirement community. It's like people that really need to walk just to live a few years longer. They can get out and they can walk. There you go. That's where you're going to walk. You want to go to the mall? Go get on a bus and we'll take you out here to the mall. And so this is just kind of what happened. Other challenges, obviously, anytime you want to make that street connection from one subdivision to another, you're going to get the persons right along there to be unhappy with you. It's just, you know, it's really tough to go in there and incrementally stitch that network back together. And, of course, funding is always an issue. And here in Charlotte, we've actually set up a connectivity fund now, so we've got a little bit of money in there so we can go and partner with developers and others and try to stitch some of these things together. Getting more streets, one of the things we do is we fund them. We include, like I said, the connectivity program and our capital improvements program. We work hard to create new connections whenever we can through our area plans, and this is one that's being worked on right now. Kent Maine's in the audience. This is one of his plans. And you can see this is South Corridor Light Rail Line. We're doing an area plan, and you can see all those little dotted lines are where we aspire to get new streets to support the transit line. Rezonings, when we get a conditional rezoning and we have an ability to work with a developer, we can get more connections there sometimes. But the real difficulty we have is our by right development. We've got a sort of an outdated zoning and subdivision codes, and connections oftentimes aren't required through by right development. You just go to the county office, you pick up your building permit, your grading permit, and you go to town. So we don't have a lot of review opportunities there. So we're looking at how do we address that by right development. We're in the process right now. We've got the urban street design guidelines. They're approved. They're adopted by city council, city policy. But that's not the end of the story. You have to, the next step is to take the zoning ordinance, the subdivision code, and try to bring it into compliance with the urban street design guidelines. And we're in that process right now. We have a consultant working with us on that process, and we are going through it. It's going to be a great deal of interest by certain parts of the development community that, frankly, are going to try to shoot it down. But we think we've got a good case built. We've got good city council support thus far that we hope to maintain. Anytime you have a policy like this, you need to be prepared to have exclusions and allowances that allow people to do the right thing, recognize that there are environmental issues, there are creeks to cross, there are other neighborhoods nearby. There may be some uses that aren't as compatible as they need to be, so there always has to be the opportunity to think before we measure and to be reasonable and sensible about the way we seek building a new network. This is just a couple of things. This is one you'll see on your tour this afternoon if you're going on the bus tour. This is an old shopping mall, one of the first we understand in the southeast. And in brilliance, this used to be a major highway that went out to the urban areas. But when we got a freeway in there, we just decided to snip that off. It used to go like this. We just snipped that thing right off and created ramps and created an interstate thing. Center City is immediately on the other side of this bridge. But this is an old mall. Believe it or not, there was a stream. You can see part of it right there. It ran all the way through here. There was a parking lot on top of it. And we had connections here and here across there. And what we did with the redevelopment, we actually snipped off this connection. You can see it's being under construction right here. We started to restore this connection right here. This is still a freeway ramp, much bigger than it needed to be because the NCDOT made us do it that way. We're creating this new street right here that's being built, restoring that. We're going to create a new bridge. This bridge is down, and we're going to create a new one. Open up the stream. And today, when you go out, what you'll see is still under construction, but this is a new bridge we built. Andres, I don't know if you're still there, but we're trying to bring the art back into public works. So the stream is going to be part of a greenway that will go from 14 miles from just north of Center City all the way down to South Carolina. And this is part of it, and it's under development. This is what the development looks like now. And this is what the new street connection looks like, new main street connection. Residential and offices. Shopping, there's a Trader Joe's right there, just opened up. We're so happy about that. Best Buy is right in here. Staples, Marshalls, stacked on top of each other. And behind, you can't see it, I don't have a slide for it, but if you were where we're standing for this photograph right here is in a parking deck that serves a Target stacked on top of a Home Depot. So it's kind of an interesting thing. So our as far as implementing the urban street design guidelines connectivity, our guidance is in place, our policy is in place, the need is clear. Challenges absolutely exist. Every connection is difficult and a battle to get. ordinance updates are going to be challenging. We're in the middle of that right now. And combining flexibility and common sense is going to be really important. So.
Thank you. That was great.